Well, I have a couple of introductions to today. One is I was only asked to teach in the last couple, like in the last week or so. Apparently someone was supposed to couldn't make it. They asked me if I can do it, and I said, sure. And then I had to think, so what am I going to talk about? So that leads me to the first introduction. Around a month ago, somebody who had Googled searching for what ends up being the title of this class, at least in Hebrew, and they found I had posted some sources online, and they asked me if I had any more information. I said, sure. I gave a class on this once in Hebrew. I sent them to it, and so on. So then when they asked me to give this talk, I said, wow, I just remembered a talk that I gave 5 years ago that I never looked at since then, and I only gave in Hebrew. And classes I only give in Hebrew, I try to give in English at some point. Why? I don't know. It's not like my children or grandchildren will possibly listen to them in English unless they want to learn English. So it's just like this thing in my head to try to get things in both languages. The other thing that happened at the same time is in the last week, and we'll see if we get to it a little bit. Last week's parsha was Ki Tetzeh. And there are a couple of people here I see who heard me speak last week. And as I was preparing that talk, I was preparing this talk, and there is overlap. Don't worry, there's no overlap in what I actually said, but there was overlap in terms of my preparation. And it comes down to this issue of license to sin. I'll put it like that. Is there ever really license to sin? Is sin ever something which is okay, advised, good, something which could be forgiven? When I say forgiven, not in terms of tshuva, but forgiven in terms of using Talmudic language, l'chadchila, that sometimes sin is okay. And all you need to do is to look at the beginning of last week's parsha when we have the very difficult section of the Eshet Yifat Tohar, which sounds as if something which is completely immoral is now something which is allowed. And how does something immoral become allowed? That's quite mysterious. Now, what ended up happening in my class last Thursday, and I hope I convinced others and not just myself, because I'm easy, I hope that I ended up showing that this concern or this consideration in terms of the Torah allowing immoral behavior is essentially not really the pshat in the chumash. The pshat in the chumash is something which really rejects it and tries to go against it, not just on the rabbinic level. And if you want to hear that talk, it's posted someplace and it's called something like Me Too and the Captive Woman. So that was the title, which leads us now to, it's in English. Our title is Yilbash Shchorim V'Yitatev Shchorim. A person should dress in black and wrap themselves in black, which perhaps we can, I don't know what we'll call this one yet in English, maybe we'll call this men in black. But it's men in black and license to sin. And that's really what should be disturbing. Source number one, and one thing I want to say again as a somewhat of an introduction, just so that we'll understand where we're going. We're going to read a Gemara. This Gemara is found in a couple of different sources. And then subsequently the Rishonim, on the various sources, have what to say about it. They have their comments. Now, the one thing we will find very quickly is that the various Rishonim in different places don't necessarily say the same thing. It wasn't like, I guess, that they do what maybe some of us do, that we can just cut and paste and just, oh, I already wrote about this someplace else, so let me just cut and paste it over here. We'll see Rashi deals with this in three different places. There's similarity, but it's not identical. So let's begin. Let's read the first source. Da'avad Karebi Ilai. So we're jumping in the middle of the Gemara in Moed Katan, which I'm sorry, but we're jumping in the middle, and it says, no, this is like the opinion of Rabbi Ilai. So what was it that Rabbi Ilai said? D'tanya, as we learned in a Braita, Rabbi Ilai Omer, Rabbi Ilai said, Imroe Adam sheyitzro mitgaber alav. If a person sees that their yetzer, what does their yetzer mean? I would translate this as their evil inclination. Mitgaber alav is stronger than them, is defeating them. Yelech lemakom she'in makirin oto. Go to a place that no one knows you. V'yilbash shchorim, dress in black. V'itatev shchorim, wrap yourself in black. V'yaseh ma shelibo chafetz, and then do whatever your heart desires. V'al yichalel tshem shemayim v'farhesya, and do not desecrate God's name publicly. So essentially, this is the first advertisement for Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You, I guess, say lot. I don't know. You want to sin, so just road trip. Now, I hope that at least some people find this a little bit surprising or a little bit disappointing. Or the thing about black is actually interesting, because I know a lot of Jews dress in black. So what does that say? Actually, from the Mishnah, can you calm her down? from the Mishnah, there's reference to dressing in white and black. It says that there was a Beit Din near the Har HaBayit, and the Kohanim who were to serve in the Beit HaMikdash would come in, and then they would be judged to see if they were worthy to serve. Those who were worthy to serve would dress in white. Those who were deemed unworthy to serve, they would dress in black, and they were sent away. So that's one of the sources that we have of dressing in black. How in the world we somehow have started to dress in black polyester is probably a long-standing tradition, which goes back thousands of years, especially the polyester. Second source that this is cited in is the Gemara in Kedushin, in source number 2, which is a little bit more developed. Ula amar k'dav Yehuda d'amar Rav Huna, kevin sha'avar adam avira v'shanaba hutralo. If a person does a sin one time and then repeats it, it becomes allowed. Now, this is not a judicial statement. This is not in terms of inside information for Beit Din Shamala, that once you... By the way, I hope you will appreciate that everybody else talking in Elul is talking about tshuva, and I'm the only one talking about sin. You know, I'm just a little concerned that, you know, we skipped a step over here and that we need a little bit more discussion about sin. So it says over here, if a person sins once and then sins a second time, it becomes allowed. So the Gemara then says, Hutrilo salkadaitech? Do you really think that it means that it's then allowed? Ela na'asetlo keheter. For the person who sins, it already becomes something which is allowed. What I'm about to say, I found remarkable. But I've had conversations with people who were brought up religious, and they told me about when they went towards non-observance. So more than one person told me that the first time they broke Shabbat, they thought there was a chance that lightning would come out of heaven and strike them down and they would die. So apparently they felt it was pekuach nefesh and it was worth the chance. And then the fact that nothing happened was then perhaps part of, okay, you know, that's, I survived, and then you can do it again. But what the Gemara is saying over here is that before a person sins the first time, there may be a lot of thought, a lot of guilt, a lot of going back and forth. And then at some point the sin happens, and it's not going to be the same kind of struggle or one struggling with oneself before a sin a second time or a third time, a fourth time. At some point the sin itself becomes habitual, and that's what this Gemara is saying. It continues and says, Amar Rabbi Abba Mishrom Rabbi Chanina, Noach lo la'adum she'yavar ve'ra b'seter v'al yitchalel shem shemayim b'farhesya. It's preferable for a person to sin privately than to sin publicly. You know, there are certain questions as a rabbi that I prefer not to answer. Do you agree with that? Or you think, no, a rabbi should answer all questions. When an 18-year-old student comes over to me and says, so, is it better to sleep with a Jewish girl or a non-Jewish girl? So, what answer should I give? That's not the question. Then I'm avoiding the question. So what answer should I give? If a lawyer is approached and asked, if I rob a bank, is it better to use a gun or a piece of paper? So should they answer that question? So I'm saying there's certain questions that you don't want to answer. By the way, my answer to that would be sleep with a Jewish girl. And they'll be surprised. They'll say, but there's more of a punishment. I'll say, I don't care that you get punished. That's not my concern. But I'd rather you fall in love with a Jewish girl than a non-Jewish girl. If we have time before we finish, I'll come back to some of these kinds of questions, because we have some interesting sources about it. But there are certain things that you don't want to answer. So when someone says, is it better for me to sin publicly or privately? So the Gemara discusses this. I said, I don't like it. But the Gemara discusses it and says, well, it's better to sin privately than publicly. And I think we all understand that, even though there is something halachically counterintuitive here. If anyone remembers the difference that we're told between Geneva and Gzela, when someone robs out publicly versus they do it quietly where no one knows about it, where it seems that, are we more afraid of God or are we more afraid what other people think? And if you're more afraid what other people think, then maybe there's something negative about that, and maybe there's something worse to the sin when you're only afraid of people and you're not afraid of God. Maybe fear, maybe not afraid of anybody, it says something, but over here, it just brought a different element into it. What was that element? The element is the result, and the result is what we call Chilul Hashem, that the person who sins publicly, it's going to create a Chilul Hashem, and therefore, indeed, we find that Rabbi Abahu made, in the name of Rabbi Chanina, made a value judgment. Again, Amar Rabbi Abahu, Mishum Rabbi Chanina, second source, second line at the end, Noach lo la'adim she'evar v'ra b'seter, it's preferable for a person to sin secretly, v'al yitchalel shem shemayim b'farhesya, rather than desecrating God's name publicly. Shenemar, and he brings a verse, Vatem beis Yisrael ko amar shem Elokim, and so on and so forth. Next line. Amar Rabbi Eli Hazaken, so you notice this is the same Rabbi Eli, but perhaps a little bit older since the previous source there. He's called Rabbi Eli. Here he's called Rabbi Eli Hazaken. Imroa Adam Sheitzro Mitgaber Alav. If a person sees, notices, senses that their Yetzer Hara, that their evil inclination is getting too strong, is going to defeat them, Yelech L'makom She'ein Makirin Oto, go to a place that no one recognizes you. V'yilbash charim, and dress in black. V'yitkaseh charim, the language is slightly different here. Cover yourself in black. V'ya'aseh kimo, and that's also slightly different. And do according shelibo chafetz, what your heart desires. V'al yichalel shem shemayim b'fahesya, and one should not sin and create a public desecration of God's name. And now you see how that fits a little bit better into the context here. The Gemara says, Eini, is this really true? V'hatanya, didn't we learn? Kol shelochas al kvod kono, whoever doesn't care what God thinks, which means going back to this point, is the whole point about public? What about God? Re'ui lo shelo bala olam, maihi. And we're skipping a little bit. It says, Rabbi Yosef Amar, zeh varver beseter. This is talking about somebody who sins secretly where others don't know about it. And it says, lo kasha. There's really not a contradiction between the sources. Ha dematzi kayefli yitzrei. One is talking about a case where a person is capable of controlling themselves. Vaha delo matzi kayefli yitzrei. And here is talking about a case where a person can't control themselves. So if I didn't know any better, I would use a word like compulsion over here, which is not a word necessarily from the world of sin, which is instead a word from the world of psychology. And this is very dangerous. Why is this very dangerous? Because then anybody who wants to sin will say, well, I can't control myself, and therefore we've now created a world of sin. I also want to make sure that we understand something. In the two sources we've read so far, which again have great similarity, neither of them have said that sin is good. Neither of them have said that sin doesn't have repercussions, consequences. Neither of them have said that you're not going to have to pay a price for this down the line. Meaning, this is not, in case you're thinking Sabbatean thought, this is not saying that sin is basically a positive thing. No, sin is bad, but it's saying that there's going to be cases that a person's going to sin. And what we have over here, I guess, is a certain type of triage, saying if a person's already going to sin, so then let's minimize the impact of the sin, and at least they are told to go ahead and do it in a different place. Now, before we go further, I want to note the riff in source number 3, because if I'm not mistaken in my reading of the riff, I think he rejects this entire idea. I think he just says this, but this isn't true. So let's read it, and I'll tell you why I think he says that. He quotes it first. D'tanya Rabbi Elia Zakein Omer, Imro Adam, Sheitzro Mitgaber Alav, Yilech Lamokom Shein Makirin Oto, V'yubel Shchorim V'tevei Shchorim, V'yaseh Ma'ashel Libo Chafetz, V'ayichel Hashem Shemayim V'fahesya. So all that we already saw, go to a different place and so on. V'leite L'drebi Eli, Ela Afal Pisha Mitgaber Yitzgro Alav, Mibayele Li Tuvei B'dayte. But even according to Rabbi Eli, the person who then is still expected, Li Tuvei B'dayte, which means L'shuv B'da'at, the person should reconsider to kaimulan hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyot shemayim, because we believe that there's no such thing as compulsion. You're predetermined that you have to do this. The riff at the end of the day says over here, all this is very nice, but this is wrong. There's no such thing that you have to sin. There's no such thing that you have no choice. Quite the opposite, he says. Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyot shemayim. We are all at times put in very difficult situations. And we have the capacity at the end of the day of Yirat Shamayim, which he understands as, what are you talking about that you can't control yourself? Be an adult. Control yourself. You have poor impulse control? Deal with it. Get better impulse control. So, as I said, if I'm not mistaken, the Riff over here cites this and says, I just don't think this is true. On the other hand, let's take a look at what Rashi does with this. So Rashi is in source 4, 5, and 6. The reason why he's in 4, 5, and 6 is because the Gemara quotes this in three different places, and as I intimated before, Rashi doesn't necessarily say the exact same thing each time. 4. Mash libo chafetz, do what your heart desires. Rashi says, what's the next word? Underlined in source 4? Avera. So what did Rashi just now say? That what is it that you're allowed to do? You're allowed to sin. Now, does this surprise anyone that Rashi said this? I'm not asking you if the Gemara surprised you. I'm asking you if Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara surprises you, or you thought that's the proper reading of the Gemara. Shut. That's what the Gemara said. So Rashi over here is not guilty of anything. Rashi did what Rashi is paid to do. And what's, I don't know if he really got paid for this. But what is that? To tell us straightforward what the Gemara said. So Rashi, and see, the reason why I'm stressing this, because you may be wondering why I'm stressing this, a lot of other Rishonim can't say this. They just can't say this. How is it possible, theologically, that the Gemara is allowing you to sin? Now, again, note what the Riff did. The Riff just, meaning the Riff didn't try to finesse it, and he didn't try to reinterpret Rabbi Eli. What did he say? We don't follow Rabbi Eli. Why? Because it's theologically wrong. That's very important. He's saying this is a theological mistake. People have ability. People have Yirat Shamayim. People, therefore, are obligated to use the Yirat Shamayim. Rashi, on the other hand, is interpreting what Rabbi Eli actually said, and he says, Mashalibo chafetz, what did it mean as your heart desired? Sin, avera. I will mention that in rabbinic literature, very often, the word avera by itself, which to us is very often a generic sin, very often in rabbinic literature, avera means sexual sin, which may well have been the connotation over here within the entire source. V'hoil ve'in makirin oto sham, and because where this person went to travel, nobody recognizes him, Leka chilul Hashem, therefore there will not be a desecration of God in that particular place. V'omer lun Rebbe Mishum Reb Haigon. Now Rashi is about to give a second interpretation after telling you what he thought was pshat. He says, but I heard from my teacher. Rashi had two teachers. Both of his teachers were students of Rabbeinu Gershom or Hagola, which is a particular German tradition that he had. But here he says that he heard from one of his teachers, which more usual it would be what he heard from Rabbeinu Gershom from Germany. Instead, over here is what he heard being said in the name of Rabbi Haigon, coming off all the way from Bavel. And he says, I heard from my teacher again, V'amulan Rebbe Mishum Rabbi Haigon, V'yasema shalibo chafetz, do what your heart desires, Ratzalomar. What does that mean? Devade kevan shalovu shchorim. Since he went through this whole process, Eino Arev Bidavar Sha'inu Chafetz Mikan Ve'elech Ba'avera. Now, this is not explained very well, so I'm not going to explain it very well yet. But what he says is that, look, let's stop for a second. How does sin normally take place? Part of it is going to be immediate gratification. Over here, if you've noted, we have delayed gratification. Delayed gratification is very interesting because delayed gratification is generally going to be, I don't know, do you want to call it a strategy or a tactic? There's a huge question in the Israeli army whenever they discuss such things. Is this a strategy or is this a tactic? I think it's a tactic. This is a tactic in order to try to defeat the Yetzer Hara. What do? You say, not now, not here, wait. And once you delay gratification, I think all of us can recognize that the chance of success has increased. So I want to now try to read this again as far as what is Rashi citing from his teacher that he heard from Rav Haigon. But again, note, it's not what he said was pshat. What did he himself think was pshat in Rabbi Eli? Pshat was you sin. That's what he said. You go to someplace else to sin. What was the reason for this? Better than sinning where everybody knows you. Go sin someplace else where people don't know you. But let's try again now his second interpretation that he cites. V'armalon Rebbe Mishum Rabhai V'yasem HaShalibo Chafetz Rat Salomer. What does it mean, what your heart desires? Devadei Kevin Shalavu Shcharim V'chule. Once you're dressed in black. See, nobody yet has told us what exactly is the significance of dressing in black. Okay, maybe, how do you pronounce it? Goth, right? Maybe that just, yeah. Maybe you like this kind of colors, maybe. Or do you have any other suggestions what dressing in black may mean? You'd be hidden. But what else? What about black in terms of symbolism? It's mourning. I know that we've all been told that Jews don't dress in black, right? I already said there's a Mishnah like this. Black is a symbol of mourning, even from the Mishnah in the Gemara. All those people that told, oh no, Jews don't do this. I don't know why they say Jews don't do this, I guess. It's quite mysterious. There's also, by the way, sources that Jews bring flowers to cemeteries from the Gemara. Also things we're told Jews don't do. So there's all kinds of things that Jews don't do that Jews actually used to do, but I guess we don't do. So over here he says, the Vada Kevin Shalavu Shchorim, certainly because you're going to dress in black and so on. And what's the so on? And go to a different place and dress in black. And so again, delayed gratification, perhaps symbols of mourning. Eino Arev Bidavar. What does Arev Bidavar mean? It's not so pleasant for this person, which means it's not what they really want. She'eino chafetz. It's not really what they want. Mikan ve'elich ba'aveira. They don't really want a world of sin. Now, I'll tell you what I didn't hear. I didn't hear him saying in the name of Haigon that you don't sin. It sounds to me that what he's concerned about may be something else. What did we say a couple of moments before? You sin one time and then a second time and then what happens? Then it becomes something which is essentially habitual. What this is trying to do is to tell you, as you sin, there's a stigma over here. There's something over here which should be very, very painful for you. In order for you to sin, you should be dressing up in a different way in order to say, no, this is not you. This is not, which means what was interesting over here, really the difference that I heard between Rav Haigon and between Rashi, was that Rashi was saying is that if you can't control yourself, then you sin. But I hear within Rav Haigon a more developed process in terms of either a strategy or a tactic against the Yetzer Hara, not that it's necessarily going to be victorious in this particular time and place, but rather it's going to keep sin as something which is spiritually traumatic, instead of something which, as we saw before, now has become almost allowed in one's mind. So that's what I'm hearing from Rav Haigon. Yes? Source number five, Rashi in the Gemara in Chagiga. L'mokom she'ein makirin oto. If you go to a place that they don't recognize you, ein da'ak togasa alav. Rashi here is saying that when you go travel around, that you're going to feel uncomfortable. You're going to be a stranger. I know it could be that in today's world, when you travel, you stay in nice hotels and you feel wonderful, but that's not what the ancient world was like. You travel to a new place and you stand out. And what he's saying is that there's going to be discomfort. And the discomfort, he's saying, will affect the ego. And he seems to be saying over here that sin is impacted by ego. Are there any psychologists over here who can correct everything I say? How am I doing so far? So read the words that he's saying here, because again, it's very interesting in terms of the psychological parts over here. What did he say? Again, this was Rashi in Chagiga, source number 5, where he says, he's going to go to a place that recognizes in that togasa alav, and he's not going to feel as proud. Vishemi yakel koach yitzro, and then perhaps his yetzer hara will be weakened. Do you notice this is different from Rashi's initial interpretation in the other source? What do you say in the other source? You're going to go to this place to sin. And now Rashi is saying, no, this is a strategy. in order to combat the Yetzer Hara. V'gam im yechte, ein adam noten lev l'fi she'enu chashuv be'eneyem v'chein b'levush chorin. And if the person sins, other people won't take note because they don't know who he is. Perhaps what it really means is they won't recognize him as a Jew. And they won't ident- and therefore there won't be a Chilul Hashem over here because they don't know who this person is. And similarly, he says, with the dressing in black. So over here, Rashi really reversed what he had said previously in the other source. Here, Rashi starts off with this whole process. Again, the delayed gratification. The ego, perhaps, is going to feel a little bit weaker. The person, this may impact the Yetzer Hara. Although perhaps what we need to discuss is the correlation of sin and depression, or depression and sin. And don't worry, we're going to get to more areas in a moment. Yes? Right, he could come back and still be Rosh Hashiva. Right. Okay. Source number six. Here's Rashi in Kedushin. Yulbo shchorim, dressed in black. Shelo yire atzmo bichvodo. Ulai yirach livavo bikach. That he's not going to see himself in a dignified way. Now, this turn of phrase is interesting. Ulai yirach livavo. Literally, what does it mean? His heart will be surfaced. But where do you recognize that language from? This was the person who couldn't go to war. Which means Rashi over here is mustering up the whole war. And I'm gonna just want to remind you again. The war discussion is where we got to the Eish Tifat Torah. So I wonder to what extent in Rashi's mind that there is some kind of a correlation, because he is using the biblical language over here from that particular section. And that is interesting. V'gam im yechta, and again, if he sins, ein adam noten lev l'fi she'enu chashuv b'neim l'chein yulbash shcharim. So three different places. Rashi, I'm not going to say, said completely three different things. In all three places, he talked about sin as a possibility, and what Rabbi Eli is advocating, if you're going to sin, then go someplace else. There seems to be, and the different sources would give different levels of importance to this, that there is also at the same time a strategy being employed that perhaps can reduce the odds of the sin taking place. But Rashi understood what Eli had actually said, is that there are times that Yetzer Hara is going to win, and therefore if you're going to sin already, again, avoid the Chilul Hashem, go to a place that people won't recognize you. Basically, what we call this, let's limit the collateral damage. Let's limit the collateral damage. We're thinking Vegas still, aren't we? Yeah, that's interesting. It's not what he said, but that's certainly interesting. So, Rashi, we understood. Rabbi Eli said, there are times you can't control yourself. Nonetheless, what should you do? Try to control yourself. What's the strategy to try to control yourself? Delay gratification is the strategy. What's the tactics? The tactics are go away, dress in black, and so on. So that's more or less what we have. But at the end of the day, what may still happen? Sin may still happen, and that's how Rashi understands Rabbi Eli, and I'll say this across the board. Good? Good. Tosfot, source number 7. Imro Adam Shiyitzo Medgaber Love, Vakata Rabbeinu Chananel. What we're going to do is really unfair, because we're going to look at a couple people quote Rabbeinu Chananel. At some point, we'll actually look in Rabbeinu Chananel, and you can say, why don't we do this the other way around? But it's more interesting to see how he's quoted, and then we'll see what he actually said. So, Tosfot said, it says in Rabbeinu Chananel, Chas v'shalom lohu tarlo lasot avera. How do you want to translate that? God forbid? God forbid did anybody allow a person to sin. Rabbi Eli can't allow you to sin. Why can't Rabbi Eli allow you to sin? Because God said don't sin. How can Rabbi Eli come and say, yeah, but it's okay if you have to sin? So he's saying Rabbi Eli never would have said such a thing. Rather, Ella al yidei kach yichna libo. He goes, by doing this, all of this delayed gratification, going someplace else, dressing up, dressing in black, then you're going to somehow purge the desire of sin from your heart. So now this is very similar to Rashi, except completely different. Yes? Do you understand why I'm saying it's similar but completely different? Or no? Right. Which means Rashi also saw the tactics and the strategy, but over here, Tosfot only sees that and never, and doesn't consider, and he says quite the opposite. Well, Rashi either right away said, well, if you can't control yourself, you're going to sin, let's minimize the damage. Over here, Tosfot says there's no way in the world he could have said it. Now, I'll ask you like this. Between Rashi and Tosfot, or Tosfot according to Rabbeinu Hananel, I'll ask you two questions, and we don't have to work so hard, because I know your answer to both these questions. Who interpreted the Gemara better, and who do you feel more comfortable theologically with? Right? So were those obvious questions? Who interpreted the Gemara better? Rashi. Who do we feel more comfortable with? Tosfot. Which is also important in terms of interpretation. Ultimately, what kind of interpretation do we stick with? Do we look at minor things like what the Gemara actually said, or do we look at macro issues like Jewish values and morals? So we essentially have two choices over here, or two paths. But I will note that Tosfot doesn't believe it's possible that he can mean to sin, that he actually means to sin. The only problem is that he says that in three different Gemarot. So here he has to somehow reinterpret it as perhaps he did. Source number 8. Tosfot in Kedushin, v'yasamashu libo chafetz, pirish rabbi chanan, ochas v'shem v'shutar lo lavor avera, elokach marabi lai, yigiat drachim v'achsanaot, v'livyat shcharim, mishabrim yetzaharam, v'nimon damin avera. Traveling is tiring, staying in terrible hotels is going to be tiring, all of this thing is just there to tire you out, and therefore sin is not going to happen. So therefore, he took all the words that he said, except he ignored one part of it. What was the one part of it? Which words of Rabbi Eli did he actually ignore? V'ya'aseh ma'ashelibo chafetz. He just sort of ignored those. Okay, those are just little words there. You don't have to interpret all the words. So he ignored those words, and rather he said, oh, look at all the things you do, and that's certainly going to take a person away from a possibility of sin. Source number 9, the Ritva goes in the same kind of direction, which means secretly, which we know is one of the backdrops of the Gemara, that it's which is also makes it a little difficult to move away from this, where it says it's better to sin privately than to sin publicly, which is where Rabbi Eli was brought in the first place. Where the person's recognized will be Chilul Hashem. Hilkach, therefore, adif le'lelech, Adufle kevin de lo matzi ka'ifli yitzrei, right? When a person cannot control themselves, as I explain later on, uvushami mafarish, and based on the Jerusalem Talmud, he says it's explained, v'yase miloshon va'asotam rishaim v'lo mashmachi v'gemara dilan k'demucha chacha. He tries to reinterpret the word and go do what your heart desires. That do what your heart desires doesn't mean do what your heart desires. It means something else, but he himself admits that there's a limit to how much you can try to finesse things till you've actually have misinterpreted something. So he admits that, unlike Tosfot, by the way, he admits that you really can't twist this around too much. Tosfot was not as troubled. Source number 10 is the Riaz. And he goes one step further just to make us a little bit happier. What was the words that we had a hard time with that I claimed Tosfot was ignoring? Do what your heart desires. So listen to what he says. Im roa adam. This, by the way, Riaz, if you don't know, is of Yitzchak or Zeruah. There were two of them, the grandfather and the grandson. So this is one of them. Okay? That didn't help you? It did help you. Im roa Riaz, Rav Yitzchak or Zeruah. Im roa adam sheyitzro mitkaber alav, yelech lemakom she'ein makirin oto, v'yivash charim, v'yitkaseh shcharim, v'yaseh ma shelibo chafetz, v'al yichalel shem shemayim b'farhesya, v'hoil u'machnia atzmo kol kach, b'yadua she'ein libo chafetz lechto. And by virtue of subjecting himself to this whole process, you know that his heart really doesn't want to sin. Because if his heart wanted to sin, what would he have done already? He would have sinned. So he's saying that within the very process of the delaying of gratification, what does that tell you? He really doesn't want to sin. Indeed, that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam in Hilchot Gittin, in a very celebrated passage, says that you're not allowed to give a, you're not allowed to force someone to give a get. A get, which is by force, is not legally binding. Nonetheless, the Rambam writes that if the Beit Din says this person must give a get, then you beat him. But how can you beat him? So the Rambam explains, oh, no, he really wants to do the right thing. It's just his Yetzirah that doesn't want to do the right thing. So you beat the hell out of his Yetzirah, excuse my language, and then he'll do the right thing. And no, this Rambam is not followed enough today. But you're right. He's going along the same lines, but he actually is trying to bring evidence to this. He's saying that by virtue of the fact that he's not sinning, and we'll say it again because we've been saying this the whole time, that normally a person has some kind of desire, and normally this is immediate gratification is what he wants, and by virtue of the fact that he's delaying this shows, now this is the point you can debate, shows that at least on some level it's not really what he wants. So that's the claim, and as I said, we went to this source just for that little finessing, because that's the part that Tosfot sort of ignored. That's the part that Ritva admitted that he was misinterpreting. And this is the part that he's saying, oh, by the way, you find this convincing? Or okay, let's look on the Meiri. I want to switch the order. I want to do 12 and then 11. So let's start the Meiri in 12. Again, same thing taking place. The Meiri explaining this sugya in two different places. We'll start with his explanation in Moed Katan. A person should try to control. See, but did you notice this was missing by everybody else? Before you just go on your road trip, what did he say? Oh, actually, one needs to work on themselves. As I try to explain in many places. This is how he understood, maybe the very end of the Gemara. No, there's certain cases a person just can't control themselves. Then they should go to a place that they're not recognized. They dress in black. So he finally said what I was hinting at before, that the dressing in black should be a sign of mourning, that the person should start being concerned about his day of death. Again, he doesn't say it as clearly as I would like, but he says, you know, dress, go sin, but dress in shrouds, right? That may help. That may work a little bit even better than a cold shower. And once a person sees that they can do whatever they want, shema tifrach ta'avato. So this is also very interesting. You'll have to, again, explain psychologically. Once you see that you can sin, and it's in a sense, he didn't say it. We'll see someone, maybe who will say it. Once you can do it, in a certain sense, it's no longer forbidden because it's within grasp. So therefore, the whole conquest is no longer difficult because you can do it if you want. What are the words you say? Shema tifrach ta'avato. And then maybe the desire will disappear, dissipate. V'af im amda be'enei ya'aseh ve'ya'aseh v'ayichale al shem shemayim v'hesya. And but if still the person can't control themselves, then they should do it and they shouldn't sin publicly. Now that's what... Again, it was pretty similar to what we've seen. If we were to choose between Rashi and Tosfot, he sounds closer to Rashi. Because he actually allowed the sin at the end. He allowed the sin, which is something that Tosfot would never do. He was a little bit more interesting in terms of the process, the symbolism of the black, what's taking place. He added one more element to it. Now once it's within reach, maybe it's no longer exciting at that point. Again, you can debate that point. But now I want to go back and look at what he says in source number 11. Aval kol she'inu yachol l'chof et yitzro, any person who's unable to control their yetzahara, noach lo she'ese beseter. Again, this is what we've seen straight from the Gemara. It's better to sin privately, va'al yechalel shem shemayim v'hesya, and a person should not sin publicly. And that we said the person sees that their evil desire is controlling them. You should go to a place that they don't recognize you. Person should again dress up in black. When he's in a place that he doesn't care about his reputation, so this is what you were saying before, back at home he cares about his reputation, he's in a place that people won't know him, so it doesn't make a difference what he does. V'shema az yichna levavo, maybe there somehow he'll be able to still control his desire. And here's where the change comes in. Vim lo yichna, but he can't control himself. Bekach, yaseh ma shelibo chafetz, do whatever you want. Bidvarim she'in behem isur. Only regarding things which are not actually prohibited. Ela shehim mechuarim, but rather they're unseemly. You want a stronger language? You want me to say disgusting? He calls, he's making a value judgment. He says, you can do, he goes, go ahead and do things whatever your heart desires. He didn't give us examples. What did it say you could do? He says that you can go do things which are, I don't know, anybody want to give me examples? And in yeshivish language, what would it be? Things which are pasnished. I don't know how to translate pasnished into... No, but it doesn't capture... There are certain things that are not done. There are certain things we don't do. So what the Meiri just now did is he found a third... This is a third voice. Yes, we had Rashi, we had Tosfot, and we had others someplace, but not a distinct voice. This is a distinct third voice where... And if you want, Tosfot would have pushed, would probably say, yeah, that's what I meant, but he never said it. But it's a reinterpretation of Rabbi Eli. He's saying that Rabbi Eli says, go do what your heart desires. Again, is it possible that Rabbi Eli would possibly have allowed you to sin? So what's the reason to say yes? He says, yes, do what your heart desires. So the reinterpretation of what your heart desires over here is, go to a place which is not as rigid, go to a place where the religious community is not controlled by other considerations than pure law. And I don't know, any example I'm going to give is going to be a bad example, right? I'll get into trouble with every example I give, right? A Sephardi having lox and bagels. My examples were much better, believe me. So what he's saying is go have a wild time. Don't break laws. Don't break laws, but go have a wild time. Okay, one second. Is there anything really wrong with going out to a bar, just to start there? Is there anything wrong with going to a bar? Is there anything wrong with going to a club? I can keep on going. At some point, you're going to say, yeah, there's something wrong. But what he's saying is go have a wild time and get it out of your system. But he never said that you should actually sin. He goes, go do things which are not appropriate, or go do things which are inappropriate, but not things which are actually sin. So as I said, I find this statement of the Meiri very, very interesting. He'll be convinced that this is actually what Rabbi Eli said. Rashi is not at all convinced that that's what Rabbi Eli said. How are you doing in terms of what Rabbi Eli said? Where do you lean on this? Or you're still up in the air on what he said? Okay. Look at the Rush, because the Rush now is going to fill in the examples that the Meiri was hinting at. Tosfot to Rush is in source 14. We'll skip the first part and go to Hachi Garsina Rabbeinu Chananel. And then we'll skip a little bit. Pirish. What does this mean? When Rabbi Eli HaZaken said, you can do, when you see that your Yetzer is getting too strong, Pirish. Mivakesh l'shtot b'minei zemer u'lesmoach b'simcha hamargila lidei aveira. You want to go out and party and do all the things that your rabbi tells you you shouldn't do because it's going to lead to sin. What are the things that he said that you can go do? He said it. He actually gave examples. What were they? He said, go to a club, get drunk, but don't sin. One second. Do you think this is a good idea or a bad idea? Good idea or bad idea? Bad idea. Any other therapists that we prefer? Right. I think it's a wonderful observation because that's really the context of the Gemara. The context of the Gemara was in terms of desecrating God's name by virtue of sin. And now this thing has really taken a life. Right, and then this thing has taken a life to it of itself in terms of, okay, so what sins are actually allowed? Where Rashi is saying, okay, go and sin, that's okay. And Tos says it's impossible to sin, and now we find this voice someplace in the middle saying, go do inappropriate things, but don't actually sin. He continues and he says where it's underlined over here, V'afil dvar malelo lo hiturim lo ela Amarkis amisi etzat lasot kedei levtiach et Yitzro lahashlim tavato. V'kevin shiratzmo lavush charim etetev shcharim mishtaber Yitzro v'nimna ve'eno aseh. So then the rush, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you go fishing, you throw out, but now he's reeling it back in. Now he just said, yeah, but I was just kidding about that. I mean, no, I don't, meaning the stated objective of going to a place where they don't recognize you was in order to go and drink and go where there's a club, but not to sin. But then when you dress in black and you go to this place far away, that's going to control yourself and you're not going to do those inappropriate things either. So that's the way that the rush ended up. And by the way, in case you don't know or don't realize or don't remember, the rush is more or less part of the school of Tosfot. So therefore, he ends up with the same Tosfot perspective that you can sin. And it's really interesting what he did. Because on the one hand, he sort of went in the same direction as the Meiri, saying that Rabbi Lai never allowed a person to sin. Rabbi Lai was saying that you can go do things which are inappropriate, but that seems to be what the strategy is over here. And Tosfot is saying, Tosfot says, no, you can't sin. Now the Tosfot Arush, who is aware. Now remember something as well. He, in the very beginning over here, mentioned Rabbi Chananel, and Tosfot also said, or Rabbi Chananel said, you can't sin. So maybe at some point we actually have to look at Rabbeinu Chananel, source number 15. Rabbeinu Chananel lived in North Africa. Let's go where it's underlined, the whole first part. He quotes the Gemara, and where it's underlined, he writes, as Tosfot quoted, Chas v'shalom, chedvav, chas v'shalom, she Eli, I guess it really should say, Rabbi Eli, she Eli hazaken, he tear, by the way, when he quotes the line before, he also, it's a question whether the Rabbi Eli is there or not, perhaps a rabbi allowing someone to sin is not really a rabbi, so therefore you notice how his smicha therefore was taken away. I know I really do think that's interesting. They're not just a question of text over here. I think that's really interesting whether we can still can consider such a person a rabbi. So he does say Chas v'shalom she Eli hazaken hitir la'avor aveira klal elokach amar im ra'a adam sheyitzro mitgaber alav v'achila v'shtiyah v'minei zemer. Notice now he added a couple other things. Achila and shtiyah. So what is it, the terrible sins you want to do? So go out to a restaurant and order some drinks. U'v'minei zemer, and have some music. I hope I don't convince everyone to sin based on this. U'mityare shema yishtaker v'levod de'avira. But the person's then afraid that they're going to get drunk, and that can then eventually lead to sin. Hitir lo leich l'mokom acher v'yiboshcharim kol ze kidei sh'lishbor titro she'achsanya libo shavor. So he says, again, this whole thing is a strategy. He certainly understood Rabbi Eli as saying that things which are permitted, not things which are not allowed. That's what Rabbi Eli said. And go to another place, because going to another place is going to also counterbalance. Again, there's a two-stage process. I mean, Rabbi Chanano is far more interesting than anybody who had quoted him. Did you all notice that? It's much more nuanced what he said. He said the person whose Yetzer Hara is getting control of them, so go out and party and have a good time, but don't do it up the block. Go to a place they don't know you and party. Ah, there's a problem, because if you party, what could happen? You can end up getting drunk and you get out of control. So he says, but if you go to a place that nobody knows you, one second, what did he actually say? And you're a guest and you feel uncomfortable, you're not going to get out of control. He says, no, meaning his concern is that you don't end up really sinning. His allowance is that you let go a little bit and you do things which are basically allowed, but generally people perhaps try to control themselves from doing it, and therefore the traveling away is in order to counterbalance the actual sin. So I just want to pause over here and just to regroup for a second. What did we see so far? We see a teaching that said a person, if they're going to sin, they should be concerned about God, because sin impacts God as well, and aside from everything else, there can also be something called a Chilul Hashem. And if you're going to do a sin, then it's better to do one privately than publicly. And the corollary of that would seem to be, if you're going to do a sin, do it at a place that nobody knows you rather than people know you, because there will be less of a desecration of God's name in that case. So that seems to be the teaching. Rabbi Eli therefore says, if you can't control yourself, go to another place. What did Rashi say? Well, Rashi was also two-pronged. Rashi said from himself than what his rabbi told him. Rabbi Gon had said, what did Rashi say? Rashi said that Rabbi Eli is saying you can sin. But nonetheless, there is a process over here taking place. Along the way, we saw the Tosfos says, no, it's not possible that you can sin. And he quoted Rabbi Chananel. He did not quote Rabbi Chananel, right, fully. He just quoted Rabbi Chananel saying, no, you can't sin. Rabbi Chananel said is much more interesting because Rabbi Chananel said something else. Rabbi Chananel said that if you see the Yetzer Hara is controlling one, then one should go someplace else, do things which are allowed, but generally not accepted. The reason you're going to go to someplace else is because then you're not going to get carried away because of the discomfort involved in being a guest, traveling, and so on. So that's what we had seen. Along the way, we saw some other things which I think were interesting, perhaps counterbalancing this permissiveness of sin, that once you sin one time, that maybe this will counterbalance this. Yes, that's more or less what we've seen so far. Well, it goes back to this point that apparently Rabbi Chananel cannot imagine that Rabbi Eli actually would have allowed sexual sins to take place. How is he allowed to do that? Go back to a doctor. A doctor can write a prescription of certain things. There are certain things a doctor can't write a prescription. There's certain thing a rabbi can allow. There's certain thing a rabbi does not have within his authority to allow. So therefore, as far as he's concerned, no, it couldn't possibly have meant what Rashi thinks it meant. Okay, has Rabbi Chananel convinced any of you that this could be pshat? Or a number of authorities, and we're not going to look at all of them, certainly source 16, which is the Kli Yakar on this past week's parsha in Ki Teitze. He does compare the process of the Eshet Yifat Tohar, who has to change her clothes and cut her nails and her hair cut off, and that whole process, he sees this as precisely parallel to what's taking place in this individual. Go to a place, go and travel, put on different clothing, and so on. He sees this both as processes in order to prevent sin from taking place. I'll say it again. Delaying gratification in both cases. The person has desire at this moment. Delay the gratification. Then do other things which are symbols of death. And that, by the way, he's very clear. We'll look at the Kli Yakar in 16. He was a preacher in Prague. That actually sounds good, right? He was the one who replaced the Maharal. And he writes, he quotes the line before, the little bit before it's underlined. Pirish Ramban Shakol Inyanei Avilut Hema. He cites the Ramban as saying that her cutting her nails and cutting her hair and changing her clothing are all symbols of mourning. The Ikar Tachbula. Do we like the word tachbula? Translate? It's strategy, but more sinister. That's what tachbula means. This manipulation, tachbula. Zukidei sheyeh hu bebeit avel, that the man who now wants to marry this woman is sitting in a house of mourning. V'yizkor li yitzro yom hamita, and will remind his evil inclination that his day of death will yet come soon. I added in soon, but that memory or that symbol, ke'inyan she'amru chazal, in the same way that the rabbi said, now listen to his interpretation on our passage, haro eshe yitzro mitgaber lav yubo shcharim v'yitatev shcharim, v'lay azo yitzro al yedei zechirat avilut. And the same thing will happen, perhaps now the person will be able to control themselves because of this symbol of mourning. So he sees both of these processes in a similar way. He's not the only one to do this, but as I said, it's a very clear way of understanding it. We will skip 17. 18 is something that I referred to in passing. It's very interesting. This is the Gemara talking about Yom Kippur, and says that on Yom Kippur there would be somebody who would take the Seir La'azazel, the scapegoat, out to the place that it's eventually will be thrown off the cliff, and along the way they build various sukkot, and what happens, sukkah, literally tents, and what happens, any stops along the way, let's read, Tanu Rabbanan, Eser sukkot v'shnei masam milin haya, Dear Mayor, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Teisha Sukkot ve'Eser Milin, Rabbi Yossi Yom Chamesh Sukkot, and we're going to skip a little bit, Keman Kurabi Mayor, second line from the bottom, Alkos Sukkah v'Sukkah, Omrim Lo, Harei Mazon v'Rei Mayim. In each one of the Sukkot, they would say to him, if you need to eat or to drink, why would they offer him to eat or to drink? It's Yom Kippur. Why would they offer him to eat or to drink? Because he's fasting, and he has a very important job to do. What's his job that he needs to do? He needs to get rid of the Seer Lazazel. So what are they afraid? They're afraid that he's going to dehydrate. They're afraid that he's going to faint. They're afraid that he's not going to be able to complete his task. So therefore, what do they do at every step? Does this surprise any of you? It's like, can you imagine like going over to the Shliach Tzibur like before Ne'ilah and say, listen, you need a sandwich, you need something over here. But that's what we're actually told, that they would, he has to make sure this gets done. And they're afraid of traveling off into the desert, there would be dehydration or the person's going to get sick, and therefore they offer him food along the way. So listen again to what I think is an interesting psychological statement. Tana, it was taught, me'olam lohutzur chadim lakach. A person never actually needed to eat or to drink. Presumably they had enough adrenaline in order to compensate for whatever other liquids they were missing. Ela she'inu doma mishi yesh lo pat b'salo, l'misha ein lo pat b'salo. But it's different somebody who has bread on their plate or in their basket, literally, to someone who doesn't have bread in their basket. So what did the Gemara just now say? That by being that he's allowed to eat and being that he's offered to eat weakens the Yetzihara, and now he doesn't have to eat. So that was said along the way. I don't recall who, maybe it was the Riaz. That was said along the way that once it's now going to be allowed, as it were, so now the desires should have been diminished and one should not want this quite as much. Okay, now we're going to move into strange territory. Okay, are you ready? We couldn't start here. Number 19 is at Sipkat HaTzadik. I hope you appreciate the name, considering what we're going to read. Tzidkat HaTzadik means the righteousness of the righteous. And who is the righteous? Who is this written by? This is Rav Tzaduk HaKohen from Lublin. So we've just now moved into Hasidic writings. Pa'amayim yesh adam omeid b'nisayon gadol. There are times that a person can stand up to incredible temptation or test. Kol kach, so it's so much, ad she'if sharlo shelo yichta. Sometimes the temptation is going to be so profound, she'if sharlo shelo yichta. It is now impossible for him not to sin. Now, this is something which, if I'm not mistaken, really troubled Rav Lichtenstein. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's this specific passage, but I do recall him saying that he was very theologically concerned with some statements in Rav Tzaduk, where Rav Tzaduk seems to imply that people don't necessarily have free will, because you're going to get to a place that you just can't control yourself. So here is where, as I said, I want to be very careful, because I think the next line is going to be even worse. You ready? Kederech she'amru, as it says, ma yaseh aven v'chulei, uvizehu nechshav ones gomor durachmona patre. Because in such situations, a person is considered to be, now we need to translate all the words here, uvizeh nechshav anus gomor. Now what does the word anus mean in either in Hebrew or certainly in rabbinic literature? The word rape is ones. The word ones does not necessarily mean rape. The word ones means something against one's will. Anusim, that's why the word is used, against one's will. Anus gomor. Anus gomor means that a person has no ability whatsoever to be able to withstand, to control themselves. And then he continues and he says, in such cases, dirachmana patre. Now this is a normal line for the Gemara. Anus drachmana patre. When something is done against your will, you have no responsibility for it. You know, go to the extreme case that I mentioned first. And I'm sorry for using this, but I think this is important. That if somebody is literally raped, they don't have responsibility as if they just had an affair. They didn't have an affair. They were forced. So it says, onus drachmana patre. When something is done against your will, you have no legal, moral, religious responsibilities for such a thing. So what if somebody puts a gun to my head and says to break Shabbat? And I break Shabbat. Do I have any moral responsibility, religious responsibility for the breaking of Shabbat? That's not even considered to be breaking Shabbat b'shogeg. That's not shogeg. What's shogeg mean? Shogeg is an accident. What's an accident? I didn't realize it was Shabbat. I didn't realize this wasn't allowed. That's not shogeg. Here somebody is literally forcing you with a gun to break Shabbat. Do I have any religious responsibility? The answer is no. But do you realize what Rav Tzaddik just now said? He says that there are cases, there are situations where the Yetzer Hara is so strong. So what word do you want to use now? Which psychological term do you want to use?
Obsession
or compulsion. Now, just as much as I heard that Rav Lichtenstein was concerned for the theological issues, psychologically, this is then going to be very interesting. What if somebody really is obsessive compulsive? What are their religious responsibilities when they are obsessive compulsive? My father, who's both a rabbi and a psychologist, once had a case, which I will share with you, and the solution. The case was a person who was a religious Jew, religious man, and he was absolutely obsessive compulsive. I'm sorry for giving the diagnosis right now, but that's the way it was reported to me. And the way it manifested itself was that he was never satisfied with the way that he said Shema. He would spend a great deal of time saying Shema. He would say it once, he would say it again, he would say it again, he would say it again, because every time he would say Shema, he was convinced he didn't say it properly. So my father tried all kinds of therapies and all kinds of things, and nothing worked, and it was a complete failure. He could not help this person. A couple of months later, he bumped into a family member, and he asked how the brother is doing, and he said, oh, he's completely fine. So he says, what happened? So the brother said, I took him to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I had him ask Rav Moshe, are you allowed to say Shema twice? And Rav Moshe said, absolutely not. It's usur to say Shema twice. There's actually a Gemara about this, that the problem with saying Shema twice was that they were concerned that you believed in dualism. You say Shema Yisrael Hashem Melech Echad and Shema Yisrael Hashem Melech Echad. So the Gemara says, we're concerned about dualism, a person who said Shema more than once. So Rav Moshe said, it's usur to say Shema more than once. That solved his compulsion. I'm sure he transferred it to something else, but I don't know if Ramosha charged him. but that's also interesting in terms of religious compulsion. But do you hear what Tzaddik just now said? Rav Tzaddik is telling us that certain going to be certain situations where a person is suffering from obsessive compulsive behavior, and at that point they're no longer responsible. One second, are any of you comfortable to say, maybe you are. The person's a sex addict, they can't control themselves, so therefore Rabbi Lai is saying, go someplace else, dress in someplace else, and go ahead and sin. Did any of you understand that's what Rabbi Lai was saying? They woke up one day and somebody did something which was wrong, and they said, you know what? We should move the line a little bit. Yeah. What's that, by the way? Is it them or is this us reading it, which is psychological? I just want to go one step further with Rav Tzaddik, because along the way then, after saying something which is really interesting, because he took this much further than anybody else. Now, those of you who want, you can then say, hold it, this is already somebody who lives much more in modern times. This is somebody who lived during the 19th century. There is much more psychology during his time, and there's sensitivity, and maybe this even impacts upon his Beit Midrash. But I'll tell you what I really found interesting at the end. The last word on page 3, then we'll turn over page... Oh, sorry, I don't know if your pagination is the same. Where it's underlined, it says, Aval ha'adam atzmo einu yocho laha'id al atzmo b'zeh kiulay adayin ha'yilo koach l'chof ha'yetzer u'kemo she'shamati b'zeh me'inyen zimri she'ta'a b'zeh. So let me pause. He just now said there are cases that a person will have so much compulsion that they can no longer control themselves. But what did he just now say? You can't diagnose yourself. Now, in his mind, who can diagnose you? Most likely the Hasidic Rebbe. Which I don't believe he's sending you off to Freud, who, by the way, did see at least one Hasidic Rebbe, and he wrote about it. You can Google that and you can find out who that Rebbe was, because there's various guesses who he was. But he just now said that there are cases of compulsion where you have no responsibility anymore. Now, that's interesting. But again, he's talking about a case of obsession to the point, and there are people like this, they just can't control themselves. Whether that's what Rabbi Eli was talking about, that I'm not so sure about. But he took Rabbi Eli in a whole other place, and he absolutely takes it. You know, as much as maybe, again, I'm not sure. That's why I asked you the question. What, were they all speaking in psychological terms? Or is it that we were reading it in psychological terms, but over here, it just sounded like it went a lot further. And what he says at the very end, you can't diagnose yourself, Ukimosha shamati bezem inyan Zimri shata'a bezem, regarding Zimri who made this mistake. Now, I will do two things. One is, if you want to know more about Zimri, I'm unapologetic about this. I have a book which is called Echoes of Eden, and I have a on Sefer Bamidbar. I have a chapter on this whole Zimri issue. It's in Parshat Pinchas. Part of it revolves around source number 20, which I don't want to read. But at the very end, what Rav Tzadik had said is, I heard regarding Zimri, he made this mistake. The source number 20 is the Mei Shiloach. Have you ever heard of the Mei Shiloach? Okay? I don't trust anybody. Don't take me too seriously now. I don't trust anybody who quotes the Mei Shiloach. Okay, I said it. The Mei Shiloach has some of the most twisted Torah that I've ever seen. And sometimes he writes things in a very unclear way. If you just want to read the first line or two of Source 20. And one more thing. And one, excuse me? Okay, so everything I just now said applies. So Rav Tzadok was actually a student of the Mei Shiloach. When he says, I heard it being said, okay, I just now tracked down what actually said, and he covers it up a little. Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Kohen v'yikach, v'lo yalech chas v'shalom adat lomer shezimri hayu no'ev chas v'shalom. And don't think for a second that Zimri was a sinner. Hold it. Anybody have any reason to think that Zimri was a sinner? Why? How can you say he's a sinner? Because it said it in the Chumash. Now, that's generally a pretty good indication. Ki min hanoef lo asa kodesh baruch hu parsha petora. God never would have quoted a sordid tale about an adulterer. I just don't know if that's true. I mean, I think he does. Ach yesh sod bedavar hazad, is a secret here. Yesh yud nikodot beznut. There are 10 levels of promiscuity. There's somebody who premeditatedly tries to sin. And he goes on to say is that you get to the 10th level and you just can't control yourself anymore, and there's some other outside force forcing you to sin. Spiritual compulsion is what he's talking about, and that's what Zimri had. And at that point, he realized it was the will of God for him to sin, and Pinchas didn't understand this. So Zimri comes out to be a tzaddik, and Pinchas comes out to be a rasha. And I hope that you appreciate that that's the most twisted thing that you can possibly imagine. But that's what Rav Tzadik was pointing, what was hinting at over here. There's sometimes that things go beyond people's control, and as I said, that's what Rav Lichtenstein didn't like. And I'm going to say a couple of more things, and then we'll finish up. And from this point on, I already did most of what I wanted to do. It's really sparks that go in different directions, which I'm not going to read. Source 21, the Sefer Chassidim. This is nothing to do with the Baal Shem Tov. This is a source from 800 years ago, where a man asks, my wife is Anita. Is it better for me to sleep with her or to masturbate? And of course, what should the right answer be? Neither. But that's the question which comes up over here. And this, by the way, makes it into commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. I'm not reading it to you. So this question also comes from this point that I have to sin, which a lot of you would say to me, no, you don't. No, you don't have to sin. Meaning, why is this the assumption? Okay, life is difficult sometimes. Life is difficult sometimes. But I'm saying this emerges from the sources that we had read. Sources 23, 24, and 25 are all sources on the other side about women who are not necessarily married and want to go to mikvah, which in Yerushalayim. Okay, so I'm going to tell you who source 24 is, and then I'll tell you 23, or maybe the other way around. We'll go in order. 23 is of Moshe Sternbach, who's the head of the Eidah Haredis. So that is basically as black as you can get in terms of outward clothing. I'm not to imply anything I've said earlier today, but he essentially says that he grapples with it. Let me put it like this. He grapples with the question. I want to leave it. 24 and 25 is a book that you probably never heard of. It's called Me'ain, I think that's how you pronounce it, Ma'ayan it should be. Ma'ayan Omer. Now that's a play on words of Rav Avadya Yosef's various book. He has Yechave Omer, Yabia Omer, and this is me, Ma'ayan Omer. It was written by the guy, sorry for calling him the guy, it was written by the guy who answered Rav Avadya Yosef's phone. Okay? And he was privy to all the private conversations. So the warning over here is, and this is what his children screamed about, those were individual cases. If my father wanted to print them, he would have printed them. But these are what the guy who answered the phone swears Rav Avadya said when asked about different cases. So this is, I don't know, this is Rav Avadya, what would you call this? Uncut or
uncensored.
Or even self-censorship. And I do respect rabbis have the ability of saying the particular cases and the cases I want to publicize. So source 24 is Isha HaMashkicha al Tfilat HaNashim. You would call this the Balanit or the Mikvah lady. B'mikvah Sha'ala. Shabala Tfo B'mikvah Grusha. Shachaya Im Gever. Lelo Nisuin. Ha'im Afshar La Et HaDavar. There is a woman who's divorced, who's living with a man, who comes to mikvah. And the mikvah lady called up and asked Rav Avadya, what should I do? So what did Rav Avadya answer? Tshuva, lahalim ayin. What does that mean? Look the other way. This is not your problem. Now, of course, the mikvah lady can say, I'm facilitating sin, as if to believe that if it weren't for you, then nobody would sin in the world, and so on. But again, this is a very interesting answer, and I hope that you realize that this comes out of the discussion that started, even though we were dealing with the men's Yetzirah, maybe it's still the men's Yetzirah, who knows. Source 25 was, Rav shemitapel ba balei tshuva, siper sheyesh isha yehudiya, shemitapel ba lekirva letorah. There's a rabbi, he deals with balei tshuva, and there are Jews he's trying to bring close to Torah of mitzvot, and there's a particular woman, v'hi chaya im goy kezug nasoi. She lives with a non-Jewish man. Ha'im yesh inyan ulamdeh she titvo lenidata. Is it proper, the rabbi asked, for me to be teaching this woman, who's a Jewish woman, living with a non-Jewish man, teach her the laws of Tarat Mishpacha? So what would you answer? So the Rav Avadya answered, over the phone, not written, till here. If you want, I can tell you where to find this book, because it's very interesting. Vadai, Rav Avadya says, absolutely, matzilami isur nida, because then you're minimizing the sin. Umikomakom lo tamer levalanit, but don't tell the mikvah lady. So I guess that's what the Rav Avadya has learned over the years. The mikvah ladies are going to give you a hard time, but the halacha over here is clear. We're best avoiding sin. We're best having strategies and tactics against sin. Nobody has said that sin is allowed, and when sin takes place, we have to do things in order to try to do tshuva. Rabbi Eli is really interesting, and whether this really tells us about the real world and about people's desires, and people always think that their desires are ones they can't control. So Rav Tzadok was real interesting over here, that you need to get a therapist or a Rebbe or somebody to tell you, yes, you can control yourself, someone who knows you well, but I wonder about the Rebbe who will ever tell their student, sure, you know, you can't control yourself at this point. And then how far would they go? Would they go as far as Rashi, so go and sin? Or would they say, okay, go to a club? Rav Avadya also has, I'll end with this. He has one tshuva somebody wrote him. This is, by the way, is published by Rav Avadya. Somebody wrote him and says, you know, I'm a yeshiva, or I learn in yeshiva, whatever, and my wife, she wants to go to a movie. So am I allowed to go to a movie with my wife? So Rav Avadya says, if she really wants to, you have to keep your wife happy, so go to her movie. But he says, but take off a black yarmulke and put on a kippah surga.